All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil Beer Guy on the ones and twos. Our special guest today, Rocky Boyman, 700 WLW, host, ESPN, college football analyst.
You want to list all his jobs? No, that would take up all the time.
Hometown guy, former NFL linebacker. We'll have him on to chat here in a little bit. But first,
he really has found his voice. I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Me too. And you know, I should let people know this. You know, I have a side gig where I just a freelance job where I fill in as a host on 700 WLW. And Rocky, he really helped me. You know, with that, and he's helped me giving me great advice on broadcasting and the do's and don'ts and the. Do you know what the two biggest things are?
I do. I was just going to ask.
It's not the content. It's not the content. You can talk about pretty much anything you want.
Ooh, like we do. Go ahead.
It's the two biggest pieces of advice are keep your energy up and keep it conversational. Just like two people at a bar or whatever. You're just out hanging out at a baseball game. And so you try to. You make sure in two people that could be you and the person out there listening. So you try to keep it conversational and keep your energy up. And what they mean by it. So when you hear people who you think some of them are who shout, that's why they're doing that is because you have to keep your energy up. Now there are people who can do that without shouting. But you want to know what I do when I go on I'll host a 9 to midnight show sometimes on Saturday night. I drink a huge thing, 5 shots, iced coffee, iced latte, 5 shots.
Then do you stay up all night?
Yes. The downfall of that is that I cannot get to sleep until about 3 or 4 in the morning. Yeah.
You have shared that tip with me before, and I do try and do it, but that's the more difficult one. Of course, we're friends, so we can be conversational, but it's a lot to have a ton of energy all the time. Like, you know, it's a big story day. Sometimes I might be a little tired.
Yeah. This is amazing. Like to think about. Yeah. I think about times when I'm tired of like, you know, I'm really tired and like to write, but to think like there's days when you're tired and those folks who do TV and radio,
they have to be up.
Still got to go. It's go time.
All right. Well, I know he has a book and he has a lot of tips in his book. So we'll ask him about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we need to take, do we want to talk politics real quick?
I mean, I feel like we should. That's
the segment.
That's what we do.
So for any of you aspiring broadcasters out there, a couple tips for you. I was never an aspiring broadcaster, by the way. But
and yet here you are. And here Rocky is, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, you're looking at me like you want me to say something. I don't know.
The big political story this week is the redistricting map, and they're all over the state holding listening sessions about what people think. Cincinnati's was yesterday. It's not something I covered, but I definitely followed your Twitter feed, some of our Columbus reporters over at the Business Courier. It's almost like I was there, I feel like, just by kind of following along there. People had their say, Jay. What'd you think?
My snarky comment on this
is that's what I'm looking for. Let's go.
In my time covering politics, I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard two things. Someone stole or vandalized a yard sign.
What?
And number two is griping about gerrymandering. And it tends to be the party that's not in control of that particular seat or that particular district that can, shockingly, Sherry, in that packed house at UC's Innovation Hub yesterday.
Were you there live?
I was there live.
The Innovation Hub's really nice, but that's a different conversation.
It is neat. I've gone, this is my second time there. And then there was also an overflow room in which people were watching the live stream, to which I'm thinking like, why didn't you just stay home and watch the live stream?
But anyway, if somebody, they probably didn't think they were going to. If somebody said to me, you would need an overflow room for the redistricting hearing, I would be like, nah. Yeah. But here we are.
But anyway, a few years ago, voters passed that they wanted redistricting reform overwhelmingly. And so this is now, it's the 10-year period of from the last time the maps are redrawn every 10 years. And here we are to redraw the congressional districts and the state house lines. And so Ohio has made the decision that, or has been forced to make the decision. Well, there's been the governor put a commission together on redistricting, a bipartisan commission. And so the bipartisan commission has
That's the one. If I had a dollar for every time somebody said created a bipartisan commission to study something, I would be
put
rich.
Put that on the list big time. or just generally created a task force or commission. Oh, the old task force. But anyway, so this commission is traveling the state right now, all around the state, all the corners, different corners of the state. And really, essentially, they're doing listening sessions. And people, one by one, will go up to a lectern and get a few minutes to state their, or, you know, share their concerns about redistricting as the legislature prepares to draw new lines based on census, the new census data. It's a little later this year because census data was later.
I'm just going to ask you to get out your crystal ball. Let's go one thing.
So there's a couple.
Is Shabbat's seat going to be like one Cincinnati district or not? The end. Tell me.
Well, there's a couple different things here at play. So they could go full out and redraw the lines for 10 years, or they can do the kick the can option, which is just redraw them for 4 years and essentially kick it to the legislature again in 4 years. And you can get in the weeds really quickly with this stuff. And people can glaze over when they hear the word gerrymandering.
I don't actually think they do anymore. That definitely was true years ago, but I think there is at least some recognition of what it is and that it does matter whether you're paying attention to it or not. But it has, I think, gone into like the political consciousness of people. And before it was like this esoteric thing. We never even covered it. I mean, over the last, you know, I would say 5-8 years, people are like, hey, this does matter.
There's absolutely no doubt.
Mattered.
It's very important. And it's very important that, you know, and I know fair in this case can be very subjective. And the gerrymandering thing and the drawing of district lines, you're never going to please everyone. And so there's always going to be someone, even when these are redrawn, and if they're redrawn truly as, you know, to fair as fair can get, there's still going to be some folks who don't like them and think that, oh, they're gerrymandering one way or the other. So there's that. But the key thing that came out of new laws here is that in the state of Ohio is that they cannot split up cities. So that makes us here in Southwest Ohio really kind of ground zero for the redistricting. As the city of Cincinnati is split into two different congressional districts. And what the new law says is that cannot happen next time around. And so what I've been hearing, and I've been hearing this for a while, is that, look, those map makers are trying to find ways to draw lines. And this is what I'm just hearing and what I believe are trying to find every which way possible to draw the city of Cincinnati into one district with still protecting two Republican districts. Right now, Southwest Ohio, of all three major cities, is the only place. Cincinnati is the only place that does not have a Democratic representative in Congress. There is one in Columbus. There is one in Cleveland. But not Cincinnati, with Brad Winstrup, Republican, in the second congressional district, Steve Shabbat in the first congressional district, Republican. You have to be mindful of the fact that Republicans control this at every single level as this is possible. The Republicans obviously control the governor's seat. They have super majorities in both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate. And they also, if this does get kicked and there are lawsuits, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, nah, we don't want you bringing us your gerrymandering. You guys keep that. You deal with that on the state level. And so it would, if there's legal issues, it gets kicked to the Ohio Supreme Court, which by the way, is also a majority Republican. And so people can nitpick this and say all they want, but at the end of the day, this is controlled at every step of the way, even on the kick the can option of 4 years, by Republicans. And so people have to be mindful of that. I know what the new law is saying, but I think there are going to be ways where they can work around that. And I've had people argue with me on that. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just saying I've pointed that out on Twitter and I've had people push back on me. I get it. But just be mindful of that. Do I think Steve Chabot, if I had my crystal ball out here, do I think somehow, some way, the Republicans find a way? I think you're going with a 4-year option at this point because it's late in the game. And I do, for something in my gut tells me that they find a way to keep Steve Chabot's seat safe. But we'll see.
I will be watching for columns about this our coverage out of the State House.
One more thing, too. And I think there are Democrats around here. There's a reason why Aftab Pureval decided to run for mayor and not wait to run for Congress, because I believe he was concerned about this very thing, too, that, hey, at the end of the day, Republicans control this. And so he jumped in the mayor's race instead of holding out. And because I think if he would have held out, he's the favorite in the mayor's race. But I think if he would have held out and they would have redrawn, or they're, maybe they do, I think he would have been the favorite for the Democrats in the whatever the new first or second congressional district looks like, whatever that Democratic-leaning district looks like. But I've just sensed from many Democrats around here that there's no hope, and I'm talking about politicians, that there's not no, but little hope that the Democrats will get a favorable seat out of this. Do you have any thoughts?
I don't, except it turns out that the map drawing is kind of exciting about, because there's a little bit of drama. You don't know what it's going to look like. And there's so few things in life, you don't know the outcome. And so it is kind of like, what's this going to look like? I have been following like kind of the daily drama of it.
Yeah. Anyway, should we go over and bring Rocky on?
Definitely.
Let's chat with Rocky Boyman.
I feel like we should ask him, are you going to run?
I think that's a great question.
A foregone conclusion. Okay, let's do this, Jay.
All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome 700 WLW host, ESPN college football analyst, and I think he'd get mad at me if I didn't say this, St. Xavier alum, Rocky Boyman.
Former trustee. I was trying to describe you in an ad for the podcast, and I was like, ooh, this is too long. So I went with WLW host and NFL star, and Jason tweaked it just a little bit.
See, I just keep throwing stuff up against the wall, and I'm seeing what sticks. You know what I mean? That's all I'm doing here. But Sherry, Jason, always a pleasure to be on here with you here today.
She's ready.
Am I the guest, though? Because, I mean, I've heard you two on the radio a lot together, and I'm like, maybe I'm the guest today.
That's right. We better be careful. We may gang up on you and start throwing the questions back at you.
Right? Rock, I want to, you know, you've told me this story before, but it's not about me and you. Well, it's about you, but not me. You come out of the NFL after what, nine, ten seasons?
Eight
seasons, and that was you've been out of football for almost 10 years now, right?
Yeah, it's been over 10 years. Can't believe it.
And it's crazy. So a decade ago, you decide life after football. And can you talk about that and how you made your decision to come home to Cincinnati and to go into broadcasting? And I love your story about how you got started in broadcasting.
Yeah, no, it was, look, I played football. I started playing football when I was 7 years old. And I knew at a young age that you know, that's something I wanted to pursue. And certainly I told my second grade teacher I was going to go to Notre Dame and I wanted to be a captain up there. And so that was something that was ingrained in my head at a very, very young age. I was blessed with a lot of ability, right, to play football. You know, so I knew it was something that wasn't that far of a, you know, a total Hail Mary. And I knew that, you know, if I stayed healthy and I worked hard, which I did, I knew it would at least be a chance. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. But then, you know, you go into college, then you get drafted, I go in the NFL and play 8 years, so many ups and downs in those 8 years. I often say that the biggest thing that, if I had to just kind of define my NFL career in one phrase, it would be that the highs were high and the lows were low. But I think that's pretty emblematic of anybody's life or career, right? You got to be able to handle the swings in life. One day things are high and boy, you're winning games and you're making plays and things are wonderful. And then the next game comes and you get hurt and you don't play well and you find yourself released and all that sort of thing. So certainly that was one of the many, many valuable lessons I learned from football, especially pro football. But yeah, you know, at age 30, I retired. A lot of that was, I mean, I could have played a ninth year, but a lot of that was, you know, the last few years of my career, I was kind of bouncing around. You know, I was here, I was there, I was with Pittsburgh, and I was Kansas, you know, that sort of thing. And I just kind of reached a time in my life where, again, I've been doing this and playing football with blinders on since I was 7, but I started to think about, okay, what's next? The main thing is I wanted some roots. You know, I wanted roots. I wanted a family. I wanted a wife. I wanted kids. And I knew, you know, bouncing around and kind of, you know, doing the way my NFL career was at the latter stage wasn't going to be conducive to that. So retired. And then from there, I faced something that every player goes through and every player, I would say every single player has a hard time with, and that is, okay, well, what do I do now? And getting this is all I wanted to do, and now I'm 30 years old, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do for the next, you know, maybe 40, 50 years of my life, and you're kind of starting from square one. I talk a lot about this in my book, but I think the main thing I learned maybe the hard way was to, you gotta quit looking in the rearview mirror, right? Everybody wants to talk about the NFL days and wants to talk about that. And you can fall into that trap of reminiscing your life away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I finally, you know, through advice of my dad and some other folks, I just started meeting with people. I took every meeting. I don't know how much money I spent on breakfast and coffees around, like, you know, 2010, but just any opportunity I could to try to figure out what I wanted to do. I mean, I tried some business things with varying degrees of success. Obviously, I went into politics.
Including you launched your own line of tequila, right?
I did that. And that was okay. You know, again, something I thought I owed it to myself to try different things because, again, I'm trying to figure out what I like to do. Yeah, I did tequila. I got involved in an indoor sports facility complex. You know, I started up my training academy, which was good. I did that for about 6-7 years. Got into politics, did the trustee thing at Green Township, which I love. I absolutely love doing that. And then, of course, got involved in the media. And I worked for 2 years without getting any paycheck doing or anything like that. I started doing my first gig was doing the post-game show on Channel 12 with Brad Johansson and Doug Pelfrey after Bengals games on Sunday. And I'd go in there every Sunday, and we talk about what happened in the game and that sort of thing. And then I started doing some stuff for my high school, doing some halftime reports. And then, okay, hey, how about doing a color analyst role on public access? So I did that. And then oftentimes when I try to, like, okay, maybe media isn't for me. I'm sure you guys have felt that early in your career. It's like, I don't know, is this going to work out? Well, there was something that always pulled me back into it. Something would happen, some good fortune would happen. Something would say, you know, stay with this a little bit. Again, which I could go into in greater detail, but it worked out, and I'm blessed to be able to do what I do. Of course, with college football and ESPN, but I really, really love the 700 WLW. Your role and the ability to talk about things that aren't just sports, because I have a lot of interest in things that are not just sports. That was a career I never would have guessed. That kind of came out of nowhere, but I'm very, very glad and fortunate it did.
let's go back to your trustee days. I mean, you were a Green Township trustee when the growth was really starting.
Yep.
I mean, it has just exploded there. It has, people go there now for the different things that Green Township has brought.
There's no question, Sherry. And again, it was great because, I mean, that's the community I grew up in. I grew up in Dent, which is right in the heart of Green Township and where I spent most of my life, and to be able to come back and then, help that community and at least represent that community, as you said. You know, they're going through a time of growth, and now all of a sudden there's over 60,000 some odd residents in Green Township. And you know, early on it was kind of going through the days when it's almost like it is now, when there was, this is again 2012, a lot of distrust in the government, and you know, so we would have people show up all the time with the video cameras and, you know, at the trustee meetings and trying to get you in a gotcha moment to say something this or that, which I never had a problem with. I thought it was wonderful. There's also, if you remember, we had the big public housing crisis that kind of made international news. That, in a roundabout way, was a way I got going on 700 WLW, because Willie would bring me on. And he would say, "Hey, we want to talk about what's going on in Green Township, and they got to put 26 units of public housing in. What are you guys going to do?" And then I would come on with him, and he'd ask me a few questions about that, and then he'd be like, "Well, who's the toughest running back you face?" So it was kind of good. Right? You know, I got to obviously talk some football, but I got to, you know, show some of my chops on non-football issues. So yeah, it was great, and and just various other things. I often tell people, you know, being involved at that level of government is great, because every decision you make, if you make a decision that you're going to put a stop sign on such and such road, you're going to see and hear from the people that you actually affect with that decision. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to see them at the gas station. You're going to see them at La Rosa's Pizza on the weekend, and they're going to say, "Hey, what's going on?" You know what I mean? So there's the accountability factor there, but you get the sense that stuff you do actually has an impact on people's lives. And I don't know if the decisions that senators and congressmen, yes, of course it impacts their lives, but does it really everyday, day-to-day life affect the average mom or the average dad out there? I don't think it does maybe as much as it does, say, a local level trustee decision would.
You know, going back to your broadcasting, and you, like you said, you started doing your games on public access and doing, you know, you were working for free. And what was it about broadcasting that, you know, you had to earn, I mean, like your football career, you had to earn your way to, you know, the 3-6 slot now with Eddie, weekdays, drive time. You co-host Eddie and Rocky show, 700 WLW. You're now an analyst on college football at the ESPN every Saturday. But you go back to those times of, and in your, when you got on WLW, you're doing 9 to midnight.
Yeah,
you know,
for 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it, though, when you went back that made you want to stick that out and think, you know, and you and I have talked about this, that it's hard and it's challenging. Was it that challenge that, you know, you sort of saw in it? Did it remind you a little bit of football in that way?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, absolutely. And you said it was the challenge. I mean, the challenge, whatever it is, if it's, you know, trying to earn a scholarship or trying to get drafted or trying to, you know, whatever, study pre-med and challenges are what have always driven me, you know, and it's, I've always taken, you know, particular, you know, umbrage and almost even like thankfulness when people do challenge me or question me, because it makes me want to drive to be able to prove them wrong, you know what I mean? And for me in broadcasting, it was tougher, yes. You know, I played at Notre Dame, and I had played 8 years in the NFL and Super Bowl, but, you know, I wasn't a Pro Bowler. I wasn't a Heisman Trophy winner. I wasn't even in Cincinnati. I wasn't even a Cincinnati Bengal, you know what I mean? So there was some things. It wasn't like I had to really, really work hard to, you know, and I think I had to be good. There was nothing else, you know, a ton that I could fall back on. And, you know, some of these guys, they, you know, if you're a Heisman Trophy winner, you're a Pro Bowler, you're a quarterback for a major team, you retire one day, and the next day you're on that desk at the studio, and you're going about your business. And that wasn't how it was for me. But I'm thankful that it wasn't that way, because I see – Jason Sherry, every day, every year, there's new analysts, you know, and new people on radio talking about college football, whatever. And they're, a lot of times they are the guys that were the big name guys. And I watch them and they're given these big positions I had to work 6, 8, 9 years to get to. But they get them like that. And I watch them and they're not ready for it. Okay, they're not ready. They're not good enough, frankly. And I am thankful that I had to go through the years of calling, you know, Eastern Illinois versus Southwest Missouri State, right? When, yeah. You know, it's like, who's watching this game, right? Like, that sort of thing. But I was able to get better and work on things and do all that versus, because I think if you get that bigger job too early and you fail at it, you never get that opportunity again. Right. And it's better, in my opinion, you know, it's worked out for me where you start at the lowest level and you get better and you build up, and you kind of keep going that way. But again, it's just, yeah, you, there's things that happen that we don't think it's going to work out and people tell you it's not going to work out, but you keep working hard. I mean, proving people wrong is always something that has driven me. And I think it certainly has done that in this field.
Let's talk about another career aspiration, and you know, you flirted with running for Congress the last cycle, and then before
this is the hot seat part of it. It's coming.
Here we go.
Before you decided, you know, not to primary Steve Chabot in the first congressional district, which you've grown up and you grew up in and you live in the heart of it. You know, you grew up in Green Township. You live in Harrison. I've been meaning to ask you this too, Rock. I noticed you really took on the mask issue around schools, and I think you became a real leading voice for a lot of people on that. I had people texting me saying, "Hey, like Rocky's like really going. He's really becoming he's outspoken on this issue of schools and." Given, you know, students the choice to wear a mask or not. And every time a school came out and decided they were going to, you know, leave it up to the students, you were tweeting about it and you were talking about it. Was that an indication of your political aspirations?
No, I mean, look, I certainly think about that and could see myself doing that. And I would say want to do that. I do want to, you know, be in public office again. But in terms of the issues and things I speak on, these are genuine. These are, you know, things just as a parent. When I talk about the dangers of masks for kids, I'm talking about that as a parent who has a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old, you know what I mean, and a wife, and, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm not doing this for it. It's not like I'm trying to do things to get noticed. There's a lot of I think politicians that do that. They latch on to issues and they don't even really know what the hell the issue is, but some poll tells them they should be on this side. I'm just being me, and I get a lot of flack for it. I get a lot of flack from even Republican-minded people for some of my stances. So I'm just trying to give my opinion, and I think I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I do my homework and I know my data. I try to let data drive my decisions on and my opinions on things. And on the masks and the COVID issue with kids, I just felt like that was a place where a voice was in particular needed. And then, you know, I'm lucky to have, you know, a platform, involved in media and known around town a little bit where I can do that. But, that was purely, that has nothing to do with anything other than, you know, I got kids and, you know, Jerry, Jason, that, you know, kids are the most important thing in your life. And you're going to do whatever you got to do to make sure you're helping create a future that gives them the opportunities that you had, that I had as a kid. And I was, you know, just a normal kind of middle class kid, but I feel like I had some great opportunities. I had great parents. I grew up in a great community like Green Township that was able to foster that and had freedom to be able to do things. And I'm trying to help, foster that same environment and protect that same environment for my kids.
So let's go back. So we did two issues at once. You said you certainly think about that, and we were talking about running for higher office. Are you looking at Chabot's seat? Are you thinking I could primary him? I could wait? I mean, where are you at on this?
Yeah, I don't think a primary is you know, I think overall Steve has done a good job. He's been there a while. I don't think a primary is something I'm looking at. You know, with all that said, there's district lines are getting redrawn. So in that sense, you know, I'm looking at those things and seeing how that works out. And I just feel that you don't wake up one day and say, hey, I want to run for Congress. No, you know, there's things, years and years of relationships that need to be built and knowledge of issues and knowledge of what's going on in your community. And I'm doing all those things. I'm seeing what's going on because I live it every day. And so in terms of that, I think just trying to be, you know, be prepared for whatever happens. And if it's something that if something does open up or if there's an opportunity that I need to go seize, I'll look at it and see if that's the best thing for me, best thing for my family. And it's something that I'm being pushed and asked to do, which I very often am, then that's something I'll decide to do.
You talk about a holding pattern, and that's, I think, the whole political world is in a holding pattern right now with redistricting coming up. And I, you know, we should get our first maps here in September. Yep. I'm totally just playing a hypothetical here. And again, I know, and you're not the only one, and I know you know that you're not the only one who's, you know, looking at this. And let's say the lines are redrawn to a point where, you know, maybe it becomes a favorable Democratic, or at least, you know, on paper, a favorable Democratic seat. Does that change the game in terms of whether Steve Chabot's going to get a serious primary? Or is your mentality that you're not going to get into a primary in any, however these lines are drawn, as long as he's in there?
No, it's a very good question, but I think to answer it, I mean, first you have to ask, you know, Steve or whoever else that, you know, what they would do if a district all of a sudden becomes maybe less favorable. Now, I will say, you know, I think my, if I don't know if you want to call it crossover appeal or whatever, I think would be pretty strong. Yeah, because I'm not a partisan on every issue. I just try to be like I feel like I'm a normal American, you know what I mean? And yes, I believe in the freedoms and everything that we have.
I would agree. I would agree with that, Rock.
Politics really drives, you know, every issue. I mean, I believe the things I believe, and I think people also will give people credit when they know they're genuine. And I feel like I'm a genuine guy. There's a lot of non-genuine people in politics, but I feel like I believe what I believe. And I think that there's people out there that maybe say at least like three things that I don't agree with Rocky on, but damn it, I know he's a good guy and I know he cares. I know he's strong on this particular issue that I would like. And then I think that would certainly have to appeal to some people across the aisle.
I mean, I do think you have a connection with the place where you live. You have a platform, of course, that's helpful. But I watched, living on the West Side, I watched the mask, you know, issue about schools play out, and what you were telling people, they were really responding to.
Yeah, I mean, for the mask issue, I've always felt that, you know, what is the more reasonable position, that you should force somebody to do something, or hey, make it your own personal choice? And that's the side I'm on. I've never cared if a person wears a mask or eight masks. I don't care. I've never made fun of a kid who or a parent who wants to have their kid. I understand it. Everybody has their own things that they're concerned with their kids. And no one loves their kids more than them. No one knows more about their unique circumstances than their parents. So why not be on the side of, if you want to wear one, you want your kid to wear one, go for it. But if you are a parent like myself, that where their, you frankly don't think your kid needs it, doesn't benefit from it, and there's data that shows that, if you don't feel like your kid, and you also know that, you know, in my opinion, that the downsides of the mask, and you're talking about masking kids that are young. My kid's 7 years old. You know, right now they're learning societal cues. Is that person happy with me? Are they mad at me? Are they smiling at me? Are they frowning at me? Are they angry? None of that stuff, you know, with a mask on. They're learning pronunciation, how to enunciate words. speech patterns, things like that, that in the real world, you can't get with a mask on. So I just feel like my opinion is, obviously I'm very, very strong on it, but I've never been on the side of, I think you as a parent should do this. No, do whatever you want. Do whatever you want as a parent, whatever you think is best for your kid. I am fine with that, and I will fight to the death to make sure you have that right. But for me, then leave me alone and let me decide what I want to do with my kid and my family.
Sounds normal to me.
I often feel sometimes that the people out there that are always like, you should accept my way of life and you should understand my background are the same ones now that are like, you got to do exactly what the hell I say. And I think that's bull crap. I think it's absolute bull crap. I don't care if you do whatever your kid, you raise your kid a certain way. I may not agree with it. I may even kind of, by myself roll my eyes a little bit at it, but I'm never going to step out there and make some sort of scene. I'm just going to say, you go do you, man. You go do you. I'm going to do me. And then we can go through this world together. It just seems reasonable. And I guess others don't see it that way, but that's their issue.
I'm with you 100% on that. I think school districts let students have a choice, and no one's judged for or made to feel bad if they want to wear a mask, and vice versa, no one's made to feel bad or judged if they don't want to wear a mask.
Right. Well, and also, Jason, the other thing too is, and you guys, I'm sure you guys know this. Look, there's so many opinions out there, and doctors, right? Every you name the issue, you could come up with think of the most crazy thing in the world, and you could find an article somewhere that's going to support what you think, right? I understand that, and there's doctors out there, that are very acclaimed and know what they're talking about, that say COVID's the worst thing in the world and you must have a vaccine, you must have a mask, and there's doctors that think the other way. I choose to let the data drive my decision because there's so much ambiguity. You don't know, this guy, do I believe this guy, or do I believe this guy?
I just daily,
multiple times daily, I look at the data. And right now, in the state of Ohio, I'm going off the top of my head from last night, but there's, for kids 17 and under, okay, there's 1,830 total admissions into Ohio hospitals. We're talking about 2.5 million kids in the state of Ohio. Since the beginning of this, 18 months, there's 1,830 admissions in the hospital. Currently, there is 3 kids in Ohio hospitals, 17 and under, with COVID. So I look at that and go, God, are we talking about shutting down schools? We're talking about going remote? We're talking about, like masking up, or that's the only way to save the kids' lives? And again, if you're one of those three kids' parents, it's a real issue. But I'm talking statistically, numbers-wise.
Those numbers, and they change every day. I feel like it's time for self-promotion. I do want to encourage our listeners to look at the good reporting by the Inquirer reporters, Dan Horn, Terry DeMeo, Ann Saker. These numbers, it's an everyday. Like, keeping up with them, I was like, what was the number yesterday? So encourage everyone to read the Inquirer's coverage of all of this.
100%.
Because I feel like we almost have a whole team looking at those numbers every day. Because
it's smart, but again, I just the data is there. Sometimes you got to work to find it, and I try to make it easily available for people because look, they got lives. It's my job to put that out there, and so people can see it, and then they can make their own decision about what they want to do. But yes, it's out there, and you just got to be able to find it.
Switch gears. Unless Sherry, do you have
no? You're good.
I want to ask you a fun question. This came up because I saw something you posted on social media last week. Your son, Bo, your oldest son, 7 years old, had his first youth football game over the weekend. And it was great. You had great pictures of you and Bo and your dad at the game. And it made me think because I've been – my four-year-old is showing interest in playing football. And I know he's four. But he keeps mentioning it, and he wants to go out and throw the football. And so I've sort of planted the seed with my wife, like, hey, maybe this guy could play football. And I wanted to ask you about that, as obviously your career and your son now playing football. What do you tell a parent if they say, hey, I'm concerned about my kid playing football?